If people missed out on the first ever shared practices, analytics-based practice management, and they are super bummed, George, what can they do about it?
You can come to the next one. Yeah, so what Richard's getting at is, if you haven't heard already, we signed a lease on a 7,700 square foot facility in Scottsdale, and it's going to be our education center. So we're hosting monthly events now at the Shared Practices Center. We got the analytics-based practice management, analytics-based case acceptance, and analytics-based case pre-ownership. And so we have our three courses. You know, they're offered once every 3 months, roughly, and they're going to be a ton of fun.
I love that we've got a lineup of courses during the seasons of the year where Phoenix is amazing, because there's 5 months where Phoenix is kind of awful, and then the rest of the year it's gorgeous, incredible. This winter, if you are sick of being wherever the heck you are that's not Phoenix, you should join us in Phoenix throughout fall, winter, and into 2022. We're going to have some amazing events coming up. Where can people sign up?
So go to sharedpractices.com/events. And on that webpage, you'll see the different courses we offer, the different dates, and then you also see descriptions of each one and who's speaking.
I will say that there was moments during that first conference when you were presenting, and certain slides, there's some diagram slides that came up that I was so excited, because these concepts have been talked about in the show, but have never been crystallized in such a way that you can understand the whole roadmap of practice ownership and how to move between them. So it will change how you view practice ownership for the rest of your career. It's worth it. Whatever it takes to come to these, it is absolutely worth it.
Couldn't have said it better myself, Richard. Thanks so much. Can't wait to see you guys in Phoenix.
Awesome. We'll see you soon.
All right, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of The Pursuit of Ownership. It is Peyton here, and we have a very special guest on today. Today, we're going to be touching on the topic of student loans. I know that's a topic that's in the back, or maybe even the front of a lot of people's minds. And with tuition going up for a lot of schools every single year, I don't see this topic going away in importance anytime soon. So today we have Mark Johnson on the show. He is the founder of Student Loans RX, and he also is a wealth advisor for RBF Wealth Advisors in St. Louis. He has focused his practice on help working with healthcare professionals, especially ones that have a lot of student loan debt, which, as many of you guys know, is definitely dentists. We definitely fall in that category. And he has been in the financial and wealth management business for over 30 years now. So, Mark, welcome to the show.
Hey, nice to be with you, Peyton.
Awesome. Yeah, we're glad to have you here. And yeah, kind of like I was saying, this is a topic that really is top of mind for a lot of people, and for good reason. You know, I mean, it's kind of scary to think about the $300,000, $400,000, $500,000 just kind of in debt hanging over your head. So I'm really excited to, you know, hear some of your perspectives and what you have seen through your time as a wealth advisor. So yeah, let's go ahead and dive into it. So if you wouldn't mind, just, I know I kind of brought in a little bit of a bio there for you, but just talking a little bit about your journey and, you know, what you've gotten or what your career has been like to get you to where you are now.
Sure. Well, thank you. I spent the first 20 years of my career on the corporate side of the investment industry. And then in 2009, I broke off of the corporate treadmill and started my own wealth management practice. And then in 2013, I joined RBF Wealth Advisors, where there's seven of us, seven wealth advisors. We manage a little over $400 million in assets, and we all have, you know, 20 plus years of experience. When I started my wealth management practice, I focused on the healthcare space. My wife's a nurse. I got involved with one of our local hospitals here in St. Louis. It's a university as well, and ended up working with a number of senior level faculty and researchers, and kind of helping them get their finances organized as they approach retirement. So obviously insurance planning, investment planning, budgeting, those types of things. And through that connection, I got invited, the university, I'll just say it here, put a plug in for St. Louis University here. St. Louis University has a very robust orthodontic residency program. Actually, my youngest daughter is in year one of her braces through that program. It's going very well. Awesome. But anyway, I got invited to do an investment presentation to a group to the orthodontic residency program. I went in and talked about, as you might imagine, financial planning, you know, budgeting, insurance, investments. I didn't mention the word student loans one time. I didn't know anything about student loans. I had no idea that they were graduating with between $400,000 and $750,000 in student loan debt. Wow. And when I heard that, I thought, well, that was kind of a waste of a lunch meeting. These guys aren't going to have any money to invest for years, you know.
Definitely,
That was, you know, I guess that was kind of a selfish attitude. But then a few of them wanted to visit with me about investing. And so there's a little coffee shop around the corner from their residency program. So we met there and they were telling me about, you know, again, this huge amount of student loan debt they had. And one of the residents said, you know, do you know anything about student loan repayment, or, you know, do you know anybody that works in this space? I said, well, let me see if I can find someone. And in my corporate career, for 20 years, my clients were stockbrokers and financial advisors. So I knew, I mean, at one point I had 3,500 financial advisors in the Midwest as clients. So I knew a lot of financial advisors. So I put out some feelers to see if I could find anybody that was working in the student loan repayment planning space. And I couldn't find anyone. So a light bulb went off and I decided I'll see if I can help these residents. And so for the first 2 years, all I did is focus on the orthodontic residency program at St. Louis University. And then we had a dental school move into town. And I didn't even know, 45 minutes away across the river in Illinois, there was Southern Illinois University had a dental school. And fast forward to today, you know, the last 12 months, we've worked with dental students coming out of 17 different dental schools. About a dozen residency programs, and we do, you know, some pharmacy, some MDs, couple veterinarians, few chiropractors, but for the most part, you know, we work in the dental space because the dental space, you guys come out of school with the most student loan debt, especially if you go on to a residency program like orthodontics or, you know, oral surgery or whatever. And, so that's kind of been our journey. And, you know, there's, you know, we're a fiduciary and obviously I have all my appropriate licenses and, you know, I can count on two hands the number of financial advisors I've been able to find on a national basis that do what we do.
Yeah. That's incredible. That's an awesome story.
Yeah. So we believe that the best way to approach your student loans is in the context of an overall financial plan. So, you know, we take the traditional training that any financial advisor would have or the experience that anyone would have after being in the business for 30 years. But then, you know, because you're coming out of dental school with maybe $300,000 to $500,000 in student loan debt, we just kind of superimpose that right in the center of the plan. And then we build out the plan based on where that professional wants to go in their career. So we've identified, at least in dentistry, four tracks. And I know this is a podcast that talks about practice ownership. So that's obviously one of the tracks. Mm-hmm. But we also, you know, some dental students graduate, they go on to residency, some become an associate, and maybe they don't know yet if they want to be a practice owner, and then some go into public health. So those are the four tracks of planning, and each track has some nuances. But obviously I tell my clients, hey, the best repayment strategy is to become a practice owner as soon as you can become a practice owner.
That's awesome. That's what we want to hear here.
Yeah. So I'm really excited to be on your podcast because I know that, you know, I mean, I visit with several hundred dental students a year. We offer a free 30-minute consultation. And so I get a lot of folks that, you know, call me up or we do a Zoom session. And, you know, a number of, you know, students are like, well, you know, I don't think I can be I want to be a practice owner, but, you know, probably not for 3, 4, 5 years. I'm like, scale that back about 24 months, you know, you should focus on, in my opinion, you know, within 24 to 36 months out of graduation should be your target.
Yeah. Yeah. And we absolutely agree here. It's kind of funny, but I feel like to an extent, our audience almost has the opposite problem where they're almost too excited to get into ownership and they want to do it with, you know, not as much clinical experience, which, you know, can be done, but it also can make things difficult too. But yeah, that's really awesome that you guys have kind of distilled it down into those four different tracks, because I think that's one of the things that's really so unique and honestly cool about dentistry is that you really can take your career any way that you want. You know, you can become a specialist, you can work in public health, you can work for someone else, or you can, you know, do your own thing and own your own practice. So I think having, you know, a track for each one of those specific plans is pretty cool. And I think it's really awesome you guys have done that.
Yeah. And, you know, it's everybody's situation's a little bit unique. And, you know, when I say, you know, you should become a practice owner in 24 to 36 months, that's just kind of maybe the target, right? If it takes you 42 months or a little bit longer than 24 months, that's okay. Obviously, you want to find the right situation. Mm-hmm. You obviously want your skill set to, you know, obviously be there to take over a practice. But, you know, you guys coming out of dental school or a one-year residency program or what have you, I mean, you're at your peak capacity to learn, right? You've been in school. You're never going to, as soon as you leave school, your capacity to learn is going to start dropping off because you won't have the discipline, right?
I'm sure. Yeah.
And so that's why I say, don't put off practice ownership too long.
Mm-hmm. Get kind of caught in your ways a little bit, you get comfortable. And I guess you probably also, from a financial perspective, you know, you start having more liabilities, whether that's a house, having kids, that kind of thing.
Sure. And that's part of the track. That's part of the planning is, you know, some of those things you can plan for, some you can't. But, you know, one of the things that we try to communicate to those on the track to be practice owners is that, you know, your priority should be to get that practice loan.
Absolutely.
And so things like buying a house and, you know, getting the lease on that new Audi probably should be postponed until you get your practice loan.
Gotcha. And I actually was going to ask you about that later, but let's go ahead and get into that now. I feel like I've heard conflicting, you know, evidence on, you know, the whole does buying a house affect your ability to get a practice loan? I feel like generally I hear that it adversely affects your ability to get a loan, but I've also heard that it doesn't really do a whole lot. What's your philosophy on that?
Well, so it depends on when you ask the question. So right now, the real estate market is, you know, at a peak. Mm-hmm. Now, doesn't mean it can't go higher. Interest rates are super low. And so the real estate market's been really hot. You know, if you bought a house today and 24 months from now, it's 10% underwater, you know, that's not going to look as favorable to a bank. So the thing that you're trying, and the other thing is, you know, real estate in Seattle is a whole lot different than real estate in, you know, St. Louis, Missouri, where I'm at. Mm-hmm. So I guess, you know, location has a lot to do with it. And then frankly, the payment. So, and this is what I try to, you know, pass on to our clients that have never owned a house before. Owning a house is a lot more expensive than the payment. So you might as well add, you know, at least 25% above and beyond your payment, because there's things that go wrong in houses. You know, all the furniture you've had in college isn't going to look cool in your new house. you know, you're going to, you know, you've got one car now, but you're not going to go out and buy a one car garage house. You're going to have to get a two car garage. And then the other side, the right side, you know, of the garage is going to be empty. So you're going to want to fill that up with stuff. And so it's just one of these things that a house is just a magnet for spending. And so if, you know, there's plenty of time to own a house. And this is one of the things, you know, most folks that are graduating, you know, dental school or, you know, mid to late 20s, right? Late 20s, sometimes maybe even early 30s. And I think there's this sense, and I get this all the time too, you know, that you, in some ways, maybe you guys feel that you're kind of behind the curve in consumption. And what I just say is, you know, be a little bit more patient. You're going to have a huge step up in your lifestyle when you graduate and start earning, you know, in excess of $100,000, right? Mm-hmm. I think first year dentist is about $130,000 nationwide. So your lifestyle is going to see a huge pickup once you graduate, but just be careful and patient on, you know, when's the time to get that house. And, you know, again, you know, if you have to put some money down on a house, $15,000, $20,000, maybe $30,000, you know, that's money that could be sitting in an investment account that the banker could look at as liquidity when you walk in and get a $1 million loan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the bank isn't going to look at your house as an asset. They're going to look at it as a liability to you. So anyway, I would just, unless you got a bunch of equity, but you know, you're not going to have that probably in a year or two.
Yeah.
Of home ownership.
Yeah. And that's another thing too with healthcare that's so unique is you're going from a situation where you most likely don't have any money saved up. You've been paying for school for X amount of years, and then you jump into an income bracket that a lot of people may never even reach in their lifetime, you know, just for your average person. I guess it's just kind of realizing that, you know, you can't go from spending college student money to, you know, a lot in a short amount of time, especially with no savings. You know, it just is not good for your financial well-being.
Right. So we typically recommend as a first benchmark, one of the first benchmarks is to get about 3 months of your living expenses, you know, saved up as an emergency savings fund.
Mm-hmm.
And most of our clients are able to do that within the first 12 months. They're able to get that, you know, if you're renting, you know, you might have $4,000 or $5,000 a month of living expenses with, you know, car payment, rent, you know, some other things in there. You got your Netflix, get off your parents' phone, get off your parents' phone plan and get your own phone plan, you know, those kinds of things.
Yeah, definitely.
And then once people are settled in, you know, focus on your career, get your skill set to where it needs to be so that when you walk in, you know, to get a $1 million loan to buy that practice, you've got some savings, you don't have a bunch of consumer debt, and you're ready to go.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, I think that's really important to remember. It's like when you're getting a loan for a practice, they're looking at, you know, the practice that you're buying, but they're also looking at you too. They're, you know, looking at you and saying, hey, are you going to be a responsible person with this money? Have you been saving up until this point? Because I feel like with a lot of people, you know, how they are with their money personally is also probably going to be a reflection of how they are in their, you know, dental practice as well. So I think that's a good point to make.
Sure. And so, you know, when you walk into a bank to get a loan for a practice, like you said, the bank's going to look at the practice. They're going to look at your production, wherever you'd worked before, make sure, if you're producing $300,000 of revenue and this practice is a $800,000 practice, okay, you know, are you going to be able to handle that? They might want the owner to stick around for a year or so. But then the other thing is, you know, sometimes I've had people that say, you know, well, I want to tackle my student loans as quickly as possible. And if you're going to be a practice owner, that may not be the best idea. I'll give you an example. If you, let's say you graduate with $450,000 in student loan debt, and in the first 3 years, you have a goal of maybe paying off $50,000 of that.
Mm-hmm.
So you could do that on a first year dentist salary, probably no problem. The question is, if you don't have any savings in 3 years, but you paid down $50,000 in student loan debt, the bank doesn't care whether you have $450,000 or $400,000 in student loan debt. But if that $50,000 was sitting in an investment account that has some liquidity, that would be a much more favorable position for the bank. You know, the other thing that I see a lot of graduates rush to is refinancing with a private lender. And usually if you're on the track to be a practice owner in 2 or 3 years, under most circumstances, refinancing with a private lender is probably not the best idea to look at, because what happens is if you go to refinance $400,000 with a private lender, let's say over 15 years or 10 years, if you're looking for the lowest interest rate over a pretty decent period of time, 10 years, you're looking at $4,200 a month payment. Mm-hmm. So again, when you walk into the bank and they see you have a $4,200 student loan payment, they would rather see you have a $1,500 student loan payment. They really don't care about the balance. And so a lot of times it makes sense for the clients we work with, for them to be on an income-driven repayment plan, keep their payment low until they get that practice loan. And then once they secure the practice loan and they're kind of settled into their practice, then we take a look at maybe doing a private refinance at that time.
Gotcha. I actually did have a question on the subject of those income-based repayment plans. So, obviously, as the name states, it's based off of how much money you're making. Do you ever see situations where there's an associate and they're, maybe looking to buy a practice somewhat soon, but they're doing so well as an associate that their payment for the income-based repayment plan is actually more than it would be with, a private fixed rate plan?
It would be rare for it to be more, because income-driven repayment is 10% of your discretionary income. Okay. Now, the first year out of dental school, most fourth-year students didn't have any income, right?
Yeah.
So when you get on an income-driven repayment plan, so one of the tips I'll give your listeners, if there's any on here that are still in dental school or residency, even if you don't have any income, make sure you file a tax return.
Okay.
Because if an income-driven repayment plan is the appropriate plan for you right out of school or residency, when you file a zero return, let's say 2020, we all getting ready to do our taxes for 2020. Let's say you're a fourth-year dental student, you didn't make any money, you file your federal taxes, put a zero on there. When you go to apply for an income-driven repayment plan later this year, you can use that zero tax return to establish the first 12 months of payments.
That's awesome.
And 10% of zero is zero, right? So you wouldn't even have a payment in the first 12 months. Now, the other thing about that is, because you don't have a payment, because your income doesn't justify a payment, you could qualify for a very, very robust interest subsidy. And this is kind of one of the unknowns that's out there. And you never hear someone advocating private refinance talk about the interest subsidies available, particularly on revised pay-as-you-earn. Revised pay-as-you-earn offers up to a 50% interest subsidy if you qualify. And if you come in with a zero income, this is for a single person or household income, zero income, you're going to qualify for that 50% subsidy that first year out of school. So on $400,000 at 6%, that's $24,000 in interest under, for a full year. You could save $12,000 of that by being on, let's say, revised pay-as-you-earn if you qualify in that first year. And then keep in mind, the second year after graduation, you've only worked 6 months the first year, right? Most graduations occur in May or June.
Yeah.
So if you start working in July, first year of income, 150, maybe only make 75. So that second year, you're only showing 75,000 of income. So you're still going to get a pretty robust interest subsidy that second year. And so if you're shooting for a 3-year goal to be a practice owner, those first 2 years, your payments are going to be super low. You can sock away a lot of money, in savings and investments. So when you walk into that bank after year three, let's say, you've got a nice nest egg there to show the banker you've got some liquidity, and your student loan payment isn't $4,000 a month or something crazy.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's a fantastic tool to know about. See, I feel like this is the things like in dental school they need to be telling us. Like,
no, we don't want that. Then I won't have a job.
Okay. Sorry. But what I'm trying to say
everybody's got to keep in their own lane.
Okay. Let me rephrase that. What I'm trying to say is this is super, you know, it's super beneficial, and it's things that I feel like a lot of students don't know.
Well, you know, I've been visiting, you know, with the dental professionals now for going on 7 years. And obviously, we're just scratching a surface, just a few of the people, right? There's going to be, I think, 7,200 dental professionals leaving dental school and residency programs or something like that this year, over 7,000. Obviously, we're not getting in front of all of them. So there's a lot of, I am very confident that there are thousands of graduates, healthcare, you know, dentists, MDs, you name it, that are coming out with mid six-figure student loan debt that get on the wrong program right out of the gate. And the reason I know that is about 15% of our business is what I call redos. These are people that have graduated for whatever reason, you know, didn't get the proper advice that they needed. They heard us on a podcast, or somebody referred us to them or whatever, and we have to go back and get them on the right program. And they may have been, you know, on the wrong program for, you know, 2 or 3 years. Last year, I had a dentist we worked with that has been on the wrong program for 10 years.
Wow. That's
incredible. And we were able to significantly improve her situation even 10 years after dental school.
Wow. That's crazy. And it's just one of those things where it's like, you don't know what you don't know. And the, you know, the world of wealth management and financial planning is definitely one of those areas.
Well, and here's the thing. I would suspect that most dental professionals have a financial advisor. It's just not been an area that the financial advisory community, and I feel terrible to say this, but, you know, my industry dropped the ball on what is, I think, the largest financial planning issue of this generation. The big firms, and, you know, they're not set up to have somebody walk in with no assets and $400,000 or $500,000 in debt. They can't monetize that.
Mm-hmm.
Or they don't want to monetize that. And, you know, I think it's some of both. You know, I'm in this for the long haul, and I see the value. I'm an entrepreneur, and one of the reasons I really like the dental space is because, you know, when I go visit a dental school, obviously not in the last 12 months, but before COVID, I would visit 10 or 12 dental schools a year. And when I'd ask the question, how many of you aspire to be practice owners one day? You know, well over half the class raises their hand.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, that's not going to be the case in other healthcare professions. You know, most of the other healthcare professions, well, a lot of them have been so institutionalized. You know, you go work for a big hospital chain, or, you know, pharmacy, right? It's real, real tough to be an independent pharmacy owner. It's not impossible, but, you know, that business has gone to the Walgreens and CVS's and Walmart. And
exactly. Yeah. And that's kind of one thing that, as I've gone through my dental school journey, as I've learned more about practice ownership, it just made me like fall in love with this career even more. It's just the ability that you can, you know, still own your own practice. You still have a lot of autonomy and, you know, choosing what you want to do. And, you know, like you said, when you can go to a dental school and over half the people will raise their hand to be practice owners, that really can't be said for a lot of other healthcare professionals anymore, or healthcare professions.
No, it's great. And so I really enjoy that aspect of it too, because you see, you know, people are excited to, I'm not saying people aren't excited to go work for another organization in dentistry, but, you know, it just seems like those that are on track to be practice owners are, you know, pretty gung-ho about it. And it's kind of exciting.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So yeah, like you were saying, a lot of what you do is working with relatively new, you know, dentists and other healthcare professionals. So obviously you're getting a lot of people that maybe don't have a lot of experience or knowledge in the world of financial planning. So what are some of the more or most common mistakes that you see from people that are, you know, in dental school or just graduated that could be avoided had they known about it sooner?
So I would say, you know, the first thing I would say is that your student loan repayment is not a one-time event. So what I mean by that is, you know, if people are responding to the emails they're getting from the big private refinance companies, you know, SoFi, Laurel Road, there's a bunch of them. And they spend millions and millions of dollars advertising. You know, I see commercials all the time on the TV, you know, about everybody's lives are so much better now that they've refinanced, but, you know, they don't say when they did. So I think, again, I think people rush to refinance because they don't know any better. They don't know that there's potentially a 50% interest subsidy on an income-driven repayment plan that's available to them. I think that under normal years, so this year, interest doesn't start accruing until October 1st, right?
Mm-hmm.
So under normal years, graduates have a six-month grace period. And I would bet at least 50% of graduates kick that can down the road all the way until the six-month grace period is close to expiring. Now, this year, you can kick the can down the road a little bit because interest doesn't start accruing until October 1st. But on a $400,000 loan, that's $2,000 a month.
Yeah.
So you don't want to kick the can down the road too far. And so I get a rush of people after right before and after graduation. And then I get a bunch of people in November and December trying to get in, squeeze in before their 6 month grace period expires. And so what I'd encourage folks to do is have a plan. You know, you really need to start developing your student loan repayment plan alongside when you're accepting a job offer. Cause like I said, there's those four tracks that we do planning around, and especially for folks, you probably don't have any on here, but if you're going into public health, that's a 10-year repayment program. You can start the 10-year clock the week after you graduate if you're smart.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to make 120 payments. So if you get enrolled in the income-driven repayment plan right out of school, you know, that 120 months starts, you know, coming down right away. So don't rush to refinance. Make sure it makes sense for you. Don't waste your 6 month grace period.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure you file your 2020 tax return, whether you had income in 2020 or not, even if it's a zero. The other thing I would say is that, you know, folks, a lot of folks, I think, look at their student loans, you know, as an isolated financial planning issue. And our experience is if you've got $300,000, $400,000, $500,000 or more in student loans, it's not an isolated issue. It's going to impact all of the other areas of your financial life.
Absolutely.
And so we believe it's important to put that together in the context of a financial plan. I mean, there's some firms out there that'll give you an hour or 2 hours of consultation and kind of tell you what to do with your student loans, but I'm not sure how they can give that advice if they haven't helped you put together a budget. They don't know what your target date is to be a practice owner. They haven't counseled you on, you know, what level of liquidity you might want to have, you know, as you're approaching practice ownership. So anyway, we don't think it's a good idea just to look at your student loans and, you know, in isolation from the other financial planning. You're going to have multiple competing financial priorities. You know, should you put money in a Roth IRA? You know, do you need some emergency savings? What about some, you know, disability life insurance? You know, there's a number of things. And so, you know, our approach is, to do that in a comprehensive way. I think that's the best way to approach it.
Yeah. And I was going to say, you kind of brought up all those different buckets, you know, emergency savings, investing, whether it's a Roth IRA or whatever that might be. for, so let's say, I know you brought up the four different tracks on the person that's trying to become a practice owner. How do you kind of, what do you recommend as far as how they allocate money to those certain things, you know, whether it's emergency fund, saving for retirement, liquidity for practice? How do you kind of see all that playing out for people that want to get into ownership?
Sure. Well, there's everybody's situation is a little bit different. So I don't want to make a recommendation that kind of covers everyone. But let's say you're a single dentist. You're going to make $150,000 your first year, maybe as an associate, but you're on track to be a practice owner. Coming out of school, no savings. Let's say you manage to get out without any credit card debt as well. Obviously, if you have credit card debt, you need to knock that out quickly, right? Because that's 20%. And that's a, you know.
It's brutal.
Yeah, yeah. 20% interest on credit cards. I mean, the market last year did 18.4. So you got 20% zero risk. Knock that out. Emergency savings. People right now with interest rates so low, people are like, well, why should I have money sitting in something earning me less than 1%? Well, a lot of dental professionals last year were you know, furloughed for 2 to 3 months. So we don't know when these black swan events occur. I'm not anticipating that we're going to have another global pandemic next year, but we don't know. So having emergency savings is critically important.
How much do you recommend for that?
Well, yeah. As a first goal, we typically recommend 3 months. So most of our clients will put together a financial plan where they'll have 3 months of their living expenses fully funded within 12 months of graduation. So that's kind of the first benchmark. Now, alongside of that, you know, we really like Roth IRAs. You put money in a Roth IRA, you're going to qualify. You know, it's like $130,000 for a single taxpayer, just under $200,000 for a household, a married couple. So most first year, second year dentists, if they're single, they're probably going to, at least in that first year, they only work in 6 months. So they're going to qualify for a Roth IRA. The nice thing about a Roth IRA is that it's completely liquid. So you can put your $6,000 in a Roth IRA and you can always take out the balance, the principal, the $6,000 initial investment can always come out without taxes or penalties. Now, we don't recommend that. This is to be put away for long-term investing, but just to let you know, it is liquid. And I've actually had clients liquidate their Roth IRAs, move it into their checking or savings account at the bank to show the bank they've got liquidity. And then within 60 days, they moved it back into the Roth IRA.
Wow. That's well played.
So we like emergency savings, Roth IRA, and then we typically will open up, you know, a traditional IRA. They may not use that in the first or second year because their income is maybe below that 130 line, but we'll open that account for future years. You know, if they're an independent contractor, they qualify for a SEP IRA or a single person 401k because they're an independent contractor, 1099 income. And we will open up typically a brokerage account, which, so for example, you're on track to be a practice owner in 3 years, let's say. You're on an income-driven repayment plan. The payment's fairly low. You've got an extra couple $1,000s a month of financial resources once you start working. You might plow that $2,000 a month into a very conservative investment account. Maybe we can get you 4 or 5% or something like that. And you build that up over the first 2 or 3 years on your way to, you know, walking into Bank of America or wherever you're going to get your practice loan. And hopefully you got 50, 60,000 sitting in a liquid account that you can point to the bank. Interest rates are really low right now. So you may not want to have that money just sitting in a savings account getting, you know, 1%, but there's plenty of investments out there where we feel pretty comfortable that we can get you, you know, something over that 2 to 3 year period of time that's going to do much better than a savings account. And so those are some of the things that we're helping our clients with.
Gotcha. And I'm not going to lie, this is kind of a selfish question just because I'm curious. So as far as long-term savings, maybe not right when you get out of school, but as kind of a good target, what do you guys recommend as far as a good percent of your money to be saving long-term?
Sure. So there's a lot of studies. Obviously, it has to do with lifestyle and spending habits and those types of things. But a good number to start off with is, I would say, or you want to get to, is 10%. So if you can take 10% off the top and put that away towards retirement, and, you know, I have sometimes, you know, conversations with business owners about that, and they say, well, my business is my retirement. And I'm like, well, I'm glad you didn't own a Blockbuster video franchise, right? So, yeah. So we don't know that your business is actually going to be your retirement. Okay. Mm-hmm. We don't know what the practice is going to be worth 20 or 30 years from now. You know, different businesses have different multiples. We don't know what technologies are going to come. And I mean, I think dentistry is a fantastic, fantastic industry. And, you know, everybody's got teeth and that's probably not going to change. But what is going to change is that there are going to be improvements to your technologies. There's going to be, you know, I don't like to floss. I know they've got those water picks. I'm not real crazy about those either, but somebody's going to come up with something better than that.
Yeah, and, definitely.
You know, I don't know if it's going to be a mouth rinse or what it's going to be, but there will be changes to the business. And so, you know, unless your plan is to open up multiple locations and, you know, all of those types of things, your business may not provide enough revenue in terms of when you sell it to fund a retirement. And so mm-hmm. I think, you know, you want to be diversified. And so I think if you take 10% off the top over your working life and put that into a diversified portfolio of investments, that could include maybe some real estate. Obviously, I'm a big fan of the stock market, the stock markets, you know, both U.S., international, large companies, small companies, tech companies, healthcare companies. You want to be diversified, but, you know, the markets, you know, it's a great place to, you know, you take your hard-earned money and you give it to somebody who's running a very, very successful business, you know, like let's, you know, an Amazon or who knows. That's not a recommendation. I'm just saying there's a lot of successful businesses out there, and that's just leveraging your resources to be able to take advantage of, you know, how to invest in these other companies.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think too, as far as the point goes about saying, hey, my business is going to be my retirement. I feel like a lot of people don't think about the tax aspect that goes into selling something like that, because it really can be a pretty big chunk that's taken out of the value of the business just going to taxes, especially if it's a one-time deal.
Sure. And I'm not a tax expert, but you know, you're going to pay capital gains taxes on something like that. It's not as high as ordinary income taxes, but hey, there's a lot of proposals out there right now, you know, to increase capital gains, and there's discussions about that. So it's 10% is a good number, and, you know, 10% for retirement, 10% for charity, live on 80%. That's probably not a bad model.
Awesome. Great. Well, it's really been awesome to interview you here. You've had a wealth of information and knowledge that I'm sure everyone listening will appreciate. I just had one more final question for you, and that was just with tuitions continually going up with dental schools, do you foresee, you know, the advice that you give changing in the future, or do you think that it'll stay kind of part of the course what it's been so far?
So I don't believe that the current student loan system is sustainable. So I'm sure that something is going to change. What the something is you know, we don't know. I can tell you they're not going to forgive $1.7 trillion in student loans.
Yeah,
President Biden had talked about a $50,000 forgiveness on the campaign trail, and he's backed off of that. Now it's perhaps $10,000.
That's really not going to put a dent in anything.
Yeah. Now, what I tell people is, though, since President Trump turned off interest on March 13th, if you had $400,000 in student loan debt, that's about $37,000 in interest savings.
Mm-hmm.
And President Biden has extended it through September 30th. So from March 13th, 2020 to September 30th of 2021, that's about on $400,000, that's about $37,000, $38,000 in interest savings. So you're almost at your 50, right there. I know that doesn't make people feel it's not the same as them just knocking 50 off the balance, but here's the thing. It's going to be expensive to go to dental school. There's virtually unlimited amount of money to send people to school between the student loans, graduate plus loans, between the private companies like Sallie Mae, Discover, Wells Fargo. Parents can take out second mortgages on their homes. Parents can take loans on their 401ks. These are all things that my clients have told me that have been done to get them through dental school. There's credit cards. Every once in a while, I'll have a client that comes out of dental school with $10,000 on credit cards. So the access to credit is the problem. You know, why wouldn't the question, and the other thing I would say, and I hope no member of the ADA is on here or executive leadership, but
I think
why isn't the associations negotiating with colleges to keep interest, to keep tuition at a reasonable rate? There's no incentive for the schools to keep their tuition at a reasonable rate because they've got more people that want to go to dental school than they have seats. So the way that anybody would do that, I mean, when you own your own practice, Peyton, you're going to charge as much as you can get away with, I hope. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
That's how the world works.
So there has to be some mechanism where access to capital is a little bit more restricted. And then I think the schools or the schools have a stake in the game in terms of how their graduates end up performing or earning. You know, maybe the schools have to be co-signers on the loans or a portion of the loans.
Oh, wow. That would be a spicy turn of events.
I mean, these schools, some of them have these huge, huge endowments. And, you know, I think schools need to maybe we start taxing endowments.
Mm-hmm.
You know, right now, endowments are only required to distribute 5% of their assets on an annual basis. Well, if they're invested and the market last year was up 18%, these endowments just continue to grow and grow and grow when they really should take 15, 20%, you know, take a much larger amount and give out to scholarships. So, you know, we'll see what happens, but I think that dental students are going to still have quite a bit of student loan debt as far as the eye can see.
Yep. Yeah. And I totally agree with you. I don't think it's going away anytime soon. It's just a matter of, you know, finding the best way to deal with it. Awesome. Well, thank you again so much. If anyone is interested in reaching out to you or your company, what would be the best way for them to go about doing that?
Sure. We do offer a 30-minute free consultation. And you can visit our website at studentloansrx.com, studentloansrx.com. And right up in the top right-hand corner of the website, it says free consult. Click on the free consult, and you just fill out, it takes 2 minutes to fill out our little consult form, and then we can book a free consult. You can also text me. I have a secure text. It's not voice. It's just a text number. 314-347-3499. Again, that's 314-347-3499.
Awesome. Thank you. Yeah, that is great. I'm sure we'll have some people taking advantage of that. And we'll put that information in the show notes as well, so you guys can access it if you need to. Well, once again, Mark, thank you so much. You've been a wealth of information, and I'm sure our audience has enjoyed it.
Thank you, Peyton. Good luck to you.
Awesome. Thank you so much, guys, and we'll see you next week on The Pursuit of Ownership.
You know who's really serious about what they do? It's those people who name their businesses after their customers. PetSmart, Runner's World, Roofer's Supply. It's like I don't even have to guess what they do. It's in their name. And if you're one of those businesses, you better have what your customers need, because there's no turning back. It's almost like getting a tattoo. You've heard me talk about dentist advisors. Well, they've been to the tattoo parlor and said, "We only do financial planning and investing for dentists. Let's get the ink." So, why does that matter? Well, Dentist Advisors has completely immersed itself in the world of dentistry and understands the complex decisions we have to make with our money, both as practice owners and providers. And they understand what success looks like for people in our shoes. So if you're a dental professional, why wouldn't you get your financial advice from a team of advisors who can put its dental-specific experience to work for you? If the advice you've been getting from your current financial advisor feels watered down or generic, or if you've never hired an advisor and the time has finally come to get your finances in order, visit dentistadvisors.com and book your free consultation today. Again, that's dentistadvisors.com.